You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hello and welcome to the Break a Bat podcast, where baseball meets Broadway. An attempt to show that my two favorite mediums don't have to live in such separate worlds and maybe even break some stigmas. We're happy to have you with us. Now let's play ball. Hello and welcome to Break a Bat. I'm your host, Al Malafronte, coming at you from the Broadway Podcast Network studios. And I got to tell you, this is up there for most excited I've been to come into the studio. I'll tell you why. Before we begin, big shout out to Lori Wheat over at Her Story Branding for helping us put this episode together. She's awesome. And we've got a full house as far as the Break a Bat team goes. Joining me in the batter's box tonight is my awesome producer, Mr. Alan Seals. What the hell is that?
I was in the middle of typing something and I was thinking, Kate's losing it. I was thinking in my mind, you said batter's box and brought me back. And I was like, no batting, number 11, Alice. And then all that came out was this unintelligible noise.
This is going well so far.
All right. Well, Alan, I hope you like the fact that I brought you a little baseball to play with. Just don't throw it at me when I try to test your baseball knowledge later. All right.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you. And we've also got someone else in the house making his on-air debut with Break a Bat. A lot of the bat heads might know him from our Instagram, Chapman on Broadway, social media manager, and my chief creative consultant, Mr. Chris Katzman.
How's it going, folks?
Good to have you here, buddy.
Thanks, Al. I'm really excited to be here.
You made it to the right show, because if that's not enough to get you stoked for this one, allow me to introduce our cleanup hitter and very special guest tonight, with credits to her name that include Legally Blonde, Rock of Ages, and Bring It On. Tonight's special guest has been hitting for some major power on Broadway going back over a decade. She's currently batting right in the heart of the Mean Girls lineup 8 times a week. Killing it is Karen Smith in front of packed stadium houses, a Drama Desk and Helen Hayes Award nominee. She's easily one of the funniest girls on Broadway and a big-time all-star who we're very happy to have join us. Now batting, Kate Rockwell.
Yeah, woo. Is that the crowd sounds?
Yeah, kind of.
Crowd sounds like,
yeah.
I thought you were going to make my noise.
I actually thought about it, and then I got nervous because I was like, I don't think I could do anything like what that was. And so then I went crowd sounds, which is why I was a little tentative in the beginning, because I could have just led with crowd sounds and I would have been really confident. But instead, I panicked.
I hate to break it to you, Kate. I mean, you've been in New York a long time. The crowd sound that took me to is like a fly ball dying at the warning track. So
you just said 9 words. I don't know what they mean. So great.
Well, Kate's been busy. She's now officially a homeowner in New York City. Very, yes. Very exciting stuff.
Yes.
And you know what's funny? This is probably, maybe the second time, Angie Shore was the other one, where this isn't the first time that you and I have met. Mm-hmm. As far as, you know, as far as guests go coming to the studio, I don't know, remember BroadwayCon?
Mm-hmm. I sure do.
Yeah. So I was the person who brought the very first baseball
to Kate. I've ever signed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And probably the last.
Probably the last, you think so?
Al, I feel like you're probably that guy for a lot of people.
Yeah, it's probably a good thing. It's like, this is what stands out.
Well,
that's
what
you're
about,
it,
right? That's what the show's about, so yeah.
But truly, it's a very memorable moment, having somebody ask a Broadway performer to sign a baseball. When you're like,
absolutely.
What? Yeah. Yeah. Sure, yes. These don't relate in my brain, but absolutely.
Well, you know what it is? It's all about fantastic performance. And speaking about performance, you're actually someone who's pretty influential in the baseball and Broadway crossover world, because I guess it was, what, 2013?
Yeah, 13. Yeah.
You were in Rock of Ages.
I was.
Tell me about something that happened in Rock of Ages going back to 2013.
Well, I had just joined the company. It was really early in 2013, like January, February time. So, and I had just come into the company, and Rock of Ages had a really kind of a unique corner of the Broadway market, in the sense that I shouldn't say this out loud because I get yelled at by the wonderful people who wrote it. But like, we were like the redheaded stepchild of Broadway, where like we got like kind of crapped on by the reviews. I was not a part of the original company. So I say we as a large family of Rock of Ages people. But like the reviews were like, this is silly. And like people in the theatrical community were like, oh, jukebox musical. But like, that was such an amazing show, and the people who would come out to see it were rabid fans. And it became one of the longest running Broadway shows of all time. But it had this kind of niche audience base that were not necessarily Broadway people, people who go to a lot of Broadway shows, people who like really love Carousel and, you know, Kiss Me, Kate, stuff like that. And we did a lot of sports crossover with Rock of Ages. We had a lot of people come to see the show. And in my first couple of weeks that I was there, I was still doing the blog. And so it was literally within my first month, Mark Teixeira came to see the show. And I'm not a big sports person. It's just not where my skills lie. But I know who he is. And my husband is a huge fan. And so I ran out. This was on a two-show day. And I ran out to one of those silly little like New York souvenir stores, and I bought a Yankees baseball and was like, can you sign this for me for my husband? And I literally was like, I can't believe that this is happening. It's like week one of Rock of Ages, and I'm like meeting this monster celebrity. It was such a big deal to me. So, and he was lovely. He did sign it. Now my husband has it on his little shelf.
Now, what's really cool about that is I remember like Yankees Magazine did a feature on that. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I took away from that was how cool he thought it was to get to hang out with you guys. Whereas, you know, quite often it seems like the athletes and, you know, the arts have to live in such separate worlds. And I think that in a lot of ways, it was super cool to see. I wish I would have been at the actual show, but yeah, he seemed pretty stoked to be there too.
He was so lovely. I mean, so friendly. And that was the thing. He was so available. So we had other people come in later in my time there that were always lovely. Nobody was ever unkind, but he made himself available to every single person in that building, all cast, the crew. I mean, he was sitting backstage. At one point, I have a memory of him sitting backstage with some of our stage crew, just like shooting shit and like hanging out with the guy at the lighting table. Like that was unusual. And then later on, that kind of highlighted just how unique it was to have him there and how kind and open he was to all of us, as opposed to like, oh, I got to go do this thing. Like, it's going to be good. He didn't need any press. I don't know why he was doing it other than he wanted to, but it was like, oh yeah, I'll just go do this thing and whatever. My manager says I have to go do it. But he was so not that way. He was so open, so friendly, and like really genuinely excited to like be on a Broadway stage, which was very cool.
Now, you get a lot of stars and famous people that come to Mean Girls, you know, generally speaking, are they as down to earth as that? Because you've probably seen a lot now. You've been in the business over 10 years.
Yeah, I think that it's 50-50, honestly. I think that we've gotten to meet some like kind of unbelievable celebrities from the entertainment community, obviously, doing Mean Girls, because I have very cool bosses who have very cool friends. And so, you know, when Amy Poehler and Maya Rudolph and Melissa McCarthy come backstage, Carol Burnett came backstage, like some like amazing entertainers. But we've had a lot of pop musicians come back. We've had a couple of Mark Sanchez came recently, and so I got to meet him. We've had drag queens come backstage. We've had it's all over the board. So I mean, Tiger Woods was there not too long ago, actually. He came backstage. I'm trying to think of non-actors that have come. It's been a very very cool opportunity to meet some people that you're like, why would our paths ever cross ever? Like me and Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I know. In the grand scheme of things, that is pretty funny.
You're like, why are we in the same building? How would we ever get in the same building?
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Your portrayal of Karen has been so universally applauded. What have been, you know, what you're almost 2 years into the show now?
Almost 2 years on Broadway, yeah. In we started February of 2018. So this coming February will be 2 years on Broadway.
Now, people can't miss you because you're literally on the marquee.
Yes.
So is there like any extra pressure to continue to like, you know, always put on a great show? Obviously, you're a super professional, but...
Yeah, there's definitely pressure. I think, and at this point, Erica, who plays Katie, she's like, we call her like the half plastic because she's not really plastic. She's actually a decent human being. But I'm the only original plastic left. And so I do feel when you look at that, now we've started switching over the posters. So now you have some with Renee and Christina and I, which is great. But some of them are still the original three and I'm the only one there still. Ashley's gone and Taylor's gone. They've moved on to other things. And so I think for one, some of the pressure is to make sure that you kind of live up to the hype of it, I guess, of being on that poster. But, you know, I always want everybody to have the same experience that they had when we first started. I don't ever want anybody to come 2 years in and be like, oh my God, this show is tired. So I feel that pressure as being somebody who has been there that whole time. I'm always thinking, make sure that you're not sitting back, make sure that you're not relaxing, make sure that you're really up on your game because these people deserve the show to be just as good as it was when we started. And I don't know if everybody feels that pressure. I shouldn't say that they do, but I know a lot of us that have been with it from the beginning, we have such a passion for the show and we care so much about it that there is a very big personal responsibility to make sure the show never lags or never settles. Because, I mean, every audience we get, especially a show like ours that is designed for a younger audience and even maybe an audience that doesn't come to a lot of Broadway because of the film connection, it's a lot of people's first Broadway show ever. And I want to make sure they have a good time as much as I can. I want to make sure I give them a good product.
It's like Joe DiMaggio once said, there's always someone in the crowd who might be seeing me for the first time.
Absolutely. We talk about that all the time.
I was about to say, actually, lots of baseball players have reflected similar sentiments about doing it for the fans, basically. You know,
absolutely.
Just having them drive their success, basically.
I have to imagine, ever having played a sport, well, I have to believe that to them, it's the similar thing that it is to us, which is like I am an actor not just because I love to act, but because I love to entertain. And I love the gift of entertainment. And I love to help people kind of leave their own lives for a little couple of hours and go live in this, whatever the fantasy world is that we're creating. I mean, Mean Girls is based in reality, but still somebody else's life, right? You get to live somebody else's life for 2.5 hours. I have to believe that professional athletes feel similarly because, yes, there is a selfish quality to it, which is I love playing baseball and I make a lot of money doing this, which is great. I don't have that. Theater actors don't have that. But but like, if you're, you know, I get paid to do something I love. But the other piece of it is I want to give this thing to the people that have come to watch me do what I love. And that's really, really important for me. And I have to hope and believe that there are athletes that feel the same way. The fans drive the reason that game exists. And so you have to consider them and you have to respect them. and hopefully give them a good time. Although in there, I guess you have to win for that. And that's harder.
That's a big part of it. Yeah. You could also throw fastballs really fast and hype the crowd
and
up.
And they like that a lot too.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah. I think Al actually was at the game when the record for fastest fastball was set by Aroldis Chapman, the Yankees
really?
Closer. Yeah. And
that's his jersey over there. He didn't sign it, but. That, yeah, he's the Yankees all-star closer who
But Angie Schwer and Haley Pachoon and...
Angie Schwer, Haley Pachoon, Courtney Wolfson. But his brother primarily wore that. I haven't really been getting it signed lately. But yeah, Aroldis Chapman, Yankee all-star closer who, believe it or not, our fan base, he's extra theatrical. But
He is.
The break of that fan base has been likening him to Regina George because he's such a diva.
Oh, no.
It's kind of cool. That's not the reaction I wanted.
Well, no, because Regina George has a lot to learn about being a decent human being. So,
well, one
and
could
I
argue
can say that as somebody who follows her around all day, not the actress, the character.
I think it's more of the diva aspect. You know, I wouldn't say we're commenting too much on his character there, but definitely some of our fans have appreciated seeing some of the posts we've put together with Aroldis charging out onto the mound with the burn book.
Oh my God.
So
did you see this?
No, I haven't seen it.
Yeah, they really enjoy that. That's, you know, kind of part of what we do is poke a little bit of fun and but also try to merge baseball
it.
And Broadway together. And yeah, the fans really love that.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they like to see the two of them together. Now, Kate, you're a super bright girl. First of all, it's a brilliant performance, so don't take this the wrong way. How do you dumb yourself down to play Karen Smith?
Oh my gosh, I don't take that the wrong way at all. Thank you. You know, it's funny. I think that sometimes, I have played a lot of roles on Broadway, but lots of them are not particularly bright. So I think maybe it's
Sherry was
a
little naive too.
Sherry's not the smartest. Neither is Margot in Legally Blonde, and neither was Skylar either in Bring It On. None of them are valedictorians. And I think that the thing that anytime I go into them, but Karen especially, because Karen is the most extreme, is it's not about what they don't have. It's about what they do have, right? That's what nobody thinks like, oh, I'm dumb. What they think is I'm pretty. I'm not like, so she's pretty. Karen is very, that is what Karen is good at. She's very pretty and that's all she needs to be. So why would she think about anything else? So you don't think about anything else. It's literally meditation. You just go out on stage. And I mean, obviously there's a lot of prep that goes into it and a lot of make sure you don't ever go up on your lines. But the goal is to think about literally nothing the whole time and just react when you're supposed to react. And that keeps it genuine. That's what makes it real as opposed to like a more, you know, one-dimensional dumb blonde character. She's not, I mean, she doesn't think about the fact that she's dumb. There's literally a line in there that's like, I don't care. Like, I'm not that smart. That's it.
To me, this sounds like you're out there, you're getting in the zone.
A lot of
times in baseball, we have a phrase, you're locked in. You know, you're just totally in the flow. And it's kind of when players give their best performances.
100%. I would say that is exactly what I'm attempting
awesome.
To do at
Very
night.
Cool.
Yeah. I literally go downstairs. So the show starts. And there's a little bit of, there's two numbers really that happen before we join. I hope that's not giving anything away, but if you haven't seen it, there are two songs that we're not in, before we arrive. But, I go downstairs early before the other girls do because I have to go away from my life, like my dressing room and my phone and my list of things I had to get done through the day and my, you know, like all that stuff. I have to get away from that and really be able to focus to be able to do it because it is, I mean, my brain goes a mile a minute. As you can see, I can't talk fast enough to keep up with myself, but, and Karen can't be that way. And I found that if I went straight from being Kate to being Karen, that it wasn't very good. So I have to go down early and like take my time and prep and stare at a wall for a second and kind of zone out. And that's the same, right? That's what.
Yeah, it's like a pregame routine.
Exactly.
You know, do you have any superstitions, by the way, before shows?
Superstitions,
or just things you always do?
I don't really. The only thing I can think that I have to do before a show is I wish I pass my dressers on the way down the stairs, and I wish them a happy musical, and The other one is that everything before I walk on stage, it's all morning because I walk on stage and my job starts, right? And people start work in the morning, everyone except us. And so I just wish everyone good morning, even though it's 7 o'clock at night.
Oh, wow.
That's a rule. Just like say that. Good morning to cool. people when I walk yeah. by. Wow. But because it's like, oh, we're starting our work day now.
So you're, this is like pre-morning for you right now then.
Yeah, I'm still sleeping.
Yeah.
Some people work out in the morning. I come talk to you guys. Uh-huh. it's such a weird life. Our lives are so strange because we start work at night, right? But we also don't, I mean, some people do sleep, but I get up at 9, which is not super late when you work till midnight. And like, so I've had a full day and then you go to start your work day. It's the weirdest. It's just the opposite of other people's lives, normal lives.
How spent do you feel at the end of a show when you've really been in character for that long?
It depends, honestly, because the show is so fast, not timeline wise, but I mean the energy, the pacing of it is exhausting. And what I found is that if I get on board and I've been doing it, we've done the show, we just had our 700th show on Broadway from opening night till now. So we've actually done it probably another 100 shows more than that between our out of town in DC and the preview process. So I bet we're somewhere in the vicinity of 800 performances at this point. And so I've learned a little bit about that, which is if you come in and you are rested and you've had your evening coffee, which is what I have to do, I actually find at the end of the show, I feel really jazzed because if I do it right, if I come in at the right energy and I do it right and I really like focus, it's truly like clearing your brain for 2.5 hours and it's very engaging and it's very like the energy is just with you the whole time. So when you finish, you're like, oh, great. If I come in a little under the weather, tired, sick, if life is just a little too real and it's hard to put aside, which of course, like it's a job, that's something that you deal with when you do Broadway stuff. And then I don't get on that train right from the beginning, it's a struggle. You always feel like you're literally like chasing behind the train car, like attached to it with one arm, but like you can't get your other arm on there to get on top of it.
Yeah.
And that is pretty draining. And by the end of that, I'm like, I need to go to bed right now. Can I just sleep at the theater? Because getting home sounds exhausting.
Now, you're doing a show with a pretty big existing fan base just from the franchise itself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Do the jokes always land on people who are expecting to see kind of like a carbon copy of the movie or expecting to see something different? How does that work?
I would say it's different based on the age of the audience, actually, which is kind of a fascinating, cool thing because in comedy, especially in musical comedy, in my experience, before Mean Girls, you sort of know what's going to hit and what's not going to hit overall. And that's just like a general rule. And obviously some audiences are quieter than others, but in general, you know where the laughs are going to come. In Mean Girls, that's not true. On the days we have younger audiences, they laugh at different things because, and this is my interpretation of why I think that is. So all you young people out there, tell me if I'm wrong. I think that it's less, some things are less funny to them because they haven't lived through it yet. So they're watching, if you're in high school or not in high school yet, There are references that are in Mean Girls, it's in the film too, but in our show that are about like kind of the cruelty of high school. And that's not funny if you haven't survived it. That's just real. Whereas for somebody like my age who has survived it, you're like, oh my God, I know. Wasn't it so terrible? And so they laugh at different stuff. It's really, really interesting. Sometimes like the sight gags are better for younger kids than it is for older adult. Like, it's just fascinating to see. So on a matinee, when we tend to have more kids in the house, we have a very different show in terms of what sort of response we get than we do on a Friday night at, you know, like tonight's show when I go in is an 8 o'clock curtain on a Friday evening. And that's going to be mostly adults because that's who's out on a Friday night. You know, that's who's buying the tickets. So it's going to be a totally different show than it will be tomorrow afternoon in the matinee.
One of the hardest I've ever laughed during a vocal performance on Broadway, sexy Rosa Parks. What a line. Did you ever have to like stop yourself from laughing while you're singing that shit?
In the beginning when we first started, I was like, I cannot believe I'm about to say this in front of people.
Oh my God.
Cause it's like, is this okay? I think it's okay. It's so brilliant. I mean, Nell Benjamin, who does the lyrics, she's a comic genius. I mean, she and Tina Fey's writing is so, they blend so beautifully together, the book and the lyrics, because they're both just, they really understand riding that line between like, this is absurdly funny and like, this is inappropriate for different reasons. But that's what it makes brilliant comedy. And it's that's one of the lines. There's a couple in there that I think are like, oh my God, I can't believe we're doing this. There's another one that Gray has some really good ones. Yeah. That he does in Where Do You Belong To, that are like, that is what you just said in front of all those people.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Now, I was so floored by your performance that I thought that this show here tonight would be a good opportunity for you to, because we appreciate great performance, whether it be on the baseball field or on the Broadway stage, for you to win a little something. And we thought that we could do so in the variety.
Oh, no, am I going to have to know about baseball? I don't know any stats.
Well, are there any stats?
I'll guess.
Technically, yes.
Well,
but we're not. But they're in the question.
Okay.
They're in the question.
And I'm pumped.
If you get enough of them right, you win the prize. Now, Alan, I'm going to give you an option tonight for fastball derby for seventh inning stretch.
Yay!
All right, so you could be a lifeline like you usually love to do for all the baseball questions.
Yes.
Or you could actually ask some of the questions alongside us.
All right, let me ask some questions.
I like it.
His name's on the script, so.
Yeah.
you spoiled it.
It's my line.
I thought that was a genuine reaction, and then he just spoiled it. I think I'll just ask him questions. It's in the damn script, Alan.
All right, Kate.
Oh, God. Okay.
I promise you this. All the Broadway questions are about shows you've been in.
Great.
But not necessarily your characters.
That's
just
okay.
Just keep it interesting. Okay.
Now, watch me get them all wrong. Be like, wow.
Well, the key thing is just to get enough right to win the prize.
Okay.
You're part of a great lineage of Broadway actresses that have taken on the role of Sherry in Rock of Ages. Which of the following actresses is not in that lineage?
Okay.
Carrie Butler, Ashley Spencer, Katie Rose Clark, and Becca Tobin.
Katie Rose Clark.
That is correct.
Ding, 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 ding. I'll be my own award bell.
By all means.
I'll also be my own wrong answer buzzer, too. So yeah. I provide my own sound effects. Not the crowd. The crowd is going really, really crazy for me right now.
Love it.
Oh, that snaps. Snap.
Catherine, okay. You're up.
Yeah. Question number two is a baseball question. All
great.
Right. So do your best.
Okay.
All right.
My husband's going to be so embarrassed.
So here's the question. How many games did Aroldis Chapman save in one day this past season to tie the Major League record? How many games did Aroldis Chapman save in one day to tie the Major League record?
What is a save?
It's a good question. It's basically when you close out, you're a pitcher and you close out a close game.
Okay.
If the game is decided by three runs or less.
Yep. Yeah.
Three runs or less. Okay, got it.
So it's a very tense and dramatic situation.
Okay.
So think about individual games.
Right.
And think about, in one day, how many would Chapman have saved?
I mean, my instinct is one.
To tie the Major League record of what?
Oh, the Major League record. I missed that. Oh, yeah, that's probably not the right answer.
There you go. The correct answer was two, by the way.
Oh, come
so
on,
you were
really?
Close.
Oh.
You're really close. You're only off by one.
God. I was really close, though, you guys.
It was so cool when he
did
that.
Oh, save in one day. Yeah, okay.
Because they did a doubleheader.
Yeah.
Well, literally, it was like there was either one game or there were two games, and so I just went with one.
I think he was only the second to ever do that. Is that right, Al?
Second Yankee to ever do that.
Second Yankee? Okay. So others have done it, I guess. But yeah, that is the Major League record. And Sorry, Kate, you did not get that question,
that's
right?
Okay.
So we'll move
that's
on to the next one. And yep. I think that's on to Alan.
Yes, because this is completely spontaneous. What's the name of the Swedish-made nutrition bar intended for weight gain that Katie gives Regina in Mean Girls?
Calteen. There used to be a song. There was a Calteen bar song for a while. It's gone now.
But oh, it got cut?
Calteen, net at Gorafet, Calteen. And somebody would just come out. It was like the ad, like the Calteen ads. Somebody would like pop out on stage and like do that little thing like three times in the show.
Wow, you are breaking news here. We didn't know this.
Demarius Copes will love that. He was the Calteen man. And so he would come out and do his little Calteen commercial and throw a Calteen bar in the air and spin and then go away. It was very funny and random, but it's cool now. But I know I'm right, so.
Yes, that is correct.
Ding, ding, ding.
Okay, well, we're not going to let you get away without another baseball question
okay.
here. So I'm going to come back with one here. I'll give you a quick hint here. We may have discussed this already during the show.
Okay.
So hopefully you have a good memory. Who holds the record for fastest fastball in Major League history? Say it for the audience.
I don't remember his first name.
Well,
is that okay?
You're close. I mean, okay. We'll accept that.
She's pointing.
Yes.
You're pointing at the jersey.
I'm pointing at the jersey.
Yes. Ding, ding, ding.
Yes.
I do remember.
Yep.
You should just point and we'll all nod. And it'll be the best podcast.
By the way, his first name is Araldis.
Araldis
Chapman, yeah.
Okay. He's also known as the apex predator now in the Broadway
and the
community.
And he loves his burn book.
Yes, he does.
That's true.
He looks great in Defying Gravity. That was one of my favorites.
That's a good one.
That's the one I saw. Okay, now I get it. I saw that on the Instagram.
Oh, the
I was like, I don't know what I'm looking at.
Chapman in green face paint and a dress.
Yes.
That's pretty standard for what we do.
A costume.
All right, I'll take this one. According to Regina George, Aaron Samuels only cares about what?
Oh, he only cares about his mom and his friends and he only cares about, is it school? It's like something like that.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah, it's like school and his mom
and
his friends.
Yeah, that was all three. There you go.
Excellent. I haven't watched that movie in a long time and I'm proud of myself for coming up with that because that's not in our show. That's just in the movie.
That I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know it wasn't in the show. But it was a very funny delivery in the movie.
Oh my God, she's genius. I mean, all of them are.
Yeah.
When I started working on this show, I had to stop watching the movie because they're not the same, but they have moments that are similar.
Yeah.
And it was like, no, I got to put that away. I can't look at that because I got to learn this version and I don't want to copy that stuff. I want to do our version. And so I haven't seen that movie.
Yeah.
Like, now it's been almost 3 years.
All right. I got one more question for you. Who won the 2019 American League Reliever of the Year Award?
Who could it be?
She's pointing again. Say it.
There we go.
I'm going to go with Chapman again because it's literally the only name I can
ding,
come
ding,
up
ding.
With right now. Am I right?
You got it.
You guys set up a really good game.
And you're about to get props, Kate. You're about to get a really great prize here. You are joining a very rich lineage of Breakabout guests who – we kind of save them for some of our, you know, favorite guests, Al Jardine to the Beach Boys and Ashley Williams. We are going to present you with the official prize.
Oh my gosh.
Let me grab it.
I'm so excited.
I'm excited too.
We can discuss sizes later.
Okay.
But
well now.
Now Alan Seals has one of these shirts as well, so you're even better company.
Size of shirts.
Yeah, what did you think I was so Jesus, this is a kid's show. No. Kate, this is your official Chapman on Broadway long sleeve t-shirt. We've got a logo on the back as well, but
oh my God, look at that.
Wear it proudly.
Baseball meets Broadway. Oh, it's literally the breaking of the bat underneath the masks.
Right?
You guys, this is a really good shirt. You want one of these.
Yeah, this is a cool shirt.
I love this. Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. We have three sizes available, so if we didn't give you the right one just now, we'll make sure that we get to it after.
Okay, I'll take it up to production afterwards. We'll work it out.
Alan, stop looking at me funny when I say sizes.
Size matters.
His eyebrows are going, you guys. They are going.
If you want a tight fit, size matters.
I love it.
You're right about that. I'm going to drink my seltzer water.
So let me ask you a question. You've been in New York for a long time now. Do you ever miss Ohio?
That's a good question. God, nobody ever asked me if I miss Ohio. I think most people just assume I don't, which depending on where in Ohio you've gone is a fair assumption. You know what? Sometimes I do, actually. I miss clean air and like grass. I miss being able to like be outside. That's like the hardest thing about New York is outside is hard to come by. It exists. You have to like go to the extreme places or like go to Central Park or go or be very, very wealthy and have your own private outside, which I do not have because I am not that. But I have a lot of very like nostalgic memories of like our backyard as kids. And I just grew up in a very normal suburb, you know, nothing crazy about any of it, but we had a really pretty little backyard and I miss that. Like I miss being able to see stars at night because you just can't see them here. It's just too bright. That might be most of it. My dad is still in Ohio, so I do still go and get to, he's not in the house we grew up in, but and I still have some friends that are back there that I see periodically, but that's, Ohio is a very different life.
the way you described it though, isn't exactly how they depicted it on Glee where like, did you watch Glee?
Not all of it.
It's not worth watching after the first four seasons.
I saw a couple episodes.
You
gotta
see Allie Stroker.
Yes.
She was in season four. Yeah.
Oh, was she in season four?
That's the last season. The last one with Cory Monty.
How many did they make?
Six. Oh. They should have stopped at four, after four. But so New York feels like home at this point?
Oh, yeah. Big time. I don't know how anybody lives. I've been here now coming up on 14 years. And I don't know how people live here and then like go live anywhere else. That's confusing to me because if you come here and you hate it, that makes sense to me because it's just not for everybody. It's a really hard place to live. But once you've been here long enough that like this is normal, how do you go live anywhere else? How do you deal with like actual quiet? Like, what is that like? To like be somewhere where there aren't other people all the time. That's like, I don't know. It just makes me feel lonely. I don't know. And my like whole perspective of it has been so skewed by New York. And I mean, I love the energy of the city. I love the mania and the sort of constant extreme. Cause it is, it's a really hard place to live. And some days are really, really hard. And so I always say like, oh, New York won today. Like it's like a constant battle of like, who's going to win, me or New York. But I also love that. I love that there, nothing is the same. No 2 days are ever the same in New York City. They cannot be because you have to deal with so many variables just to like go get a cup of coffee. And that's neat that, you know, I'll never be bored. I will never be, I mean, you can be very alone or not alone and still feel lonely, but like, you're also just never lonely. If you want to be, you don't ever have to be lonely. You can always find people who want to talk to you. You can always find something to do. You can always find somewhere to go. It's just it's such a great equalizer in that way that there's just so much to do all the time of any kind.
Let me ask you a question. I just want to touch on this quickly. When you took a brief hiatus from acting to pursue a degree in wine,
yes.
Was that because was the theater lifestyle overwhelming? Tell us the story behind that.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of things. I had done 2.5 straight years of the show Bring It On that I had been working on. We did it from the ground up. We went out of town and we had done a national tour and then we had done a Broadway run and then I had 3 days off. Over those 3 days, I got engaged and then I started rehearsals for Rock of Ages, which I did for almost a year and a half straight. And so I had been both of those shows are very athletic. It's extremely high energy, similar to Mean Girls in that way. Like it's not like you don't get to sit and stand and sing. You have to be like running in high heels, also singing all the time, catching people flying out of the air, all that kind of stuff. And I was tired. I was very, very tired. And I was dealing with a lot of kind of long-term injuries that come with repetitive action, not necessarily like broken foot injury, but like just wear and tear that comes from doing stuff every single day, the exact same way on the exact same side of your body. It's a weird life that we live. And I was tired and I had come here, you know, 10 years prior at about that time. And I had been very, very lucky that I had worked pretty consistently as an actor. I had had waitering jobs and babysitting jobs, but like I had most of the time sustained myself as an actor for those 9 years. And it was all I knew. And I was starting to find myself, I call them the golden handcuffs. I didn't create that expression, but it's something that really resonated with me, where you're like, oh my God, I don't want to go to my Broadway show right now. I'm so tired. I just want to eat dinner at 7 o'clock at night, like a normal person. Like that dialogue, is incredibly toxic, because it means you don't love what you do anymore. And if you don't love what you do in this business, you should go away, because it's too hard. You miss everything. You literally miss everything. And there are so many people that would kill for the opportunity. And those buildings, those theaters, the show, the community, everything needs you to love it. That doesn't mean you have to come in, you know, spewing rainbows and sunshine every day, but it does mean that you have to want to be there. 90% of the time, you have to want to be there. You're fine. 10%, fine. But I wasn't there. I wasn't doing it because I wanted to. I was doing it because it was what I knew. And I was doing it because it was what was working and what was safe and what had been happening for me. So why would I do anything else? And I got to a place where I was like, you know what? It's time to stop doing that. Nobody wants that, like, negative Nancy in the building. Nobody wants to hear about, like, how miserable you are doing your Broadway show. And I didn't want, I had always told myself if I ever found myself in that position, I would go away. And I did. I found myself there. And it was time for me to leave Rock of Ages. And I wanted to, I wanted to be able to eat at my wedding and at my honeymoon, which is why I loved Rock of Ages, because those costumes were so small. So I left and I went and got married. And when we came back from our honeymoon, I was working on a lab, a developmental process of another new show. And I just found myself so unhappy to be there. And I was like, this is awful. Somebody else will be good at, no, everybody's talented here, right? It's not like I'm any better than anybody else. So, like, go away, get out of the way. Let somebody who wants to be here do it. And go do something else and get some perspective. And I fell into the wine industry. I met through a friend, somebody who was running a wine shop on the Lower East Side. And I love wine. Wine is a hobby of mine, always has been, because it's also very artistic. Actually, we could go on and on about that if we wanted. But and he offered me a part-time job, like working the register. Like, literally just, I was like, oh yeah, I'm not doing anything. Friday and Saturday nights, come in, like work the register, stock shelves. And I fell in love with it. And so I went to, it's a little bit like an associate's degree. It's not really like I don't have a master's degree or anything. I have a certification from the Wine Spirits Education Trust is what it's called. It's like an international school of wine and spirits training. But I went and I did get my training in that. And I actually ended up working full-time for them for a little while. I was the assistant manager of the shop down there for about 8 months. I worked there for just close to 2 years, actually, full-time for just about 9 months. And then I started to feel that need to, like, go, I missed it. I missed performing. And the one thing I had said that no matter what, if, like, a play came up, because I'd never done a play, I was like, if a play comes up, if an opportunity for a play comes up, I want to go to the audition, because I had stopped auditioning for the most part. And I went in and I did this audition for this play and I booked it and it happened. And that was the thing that brought me back into the theater community. Cause from there came, the opportunity to do a classic show. I did a production of Carousel in DC at Arena Stages, which I was like, someone hired me to do Rodgers and Hammerstein. Sure. Yeah, I'll go do that. And so I went and did that. And then while I was there is when the Mean Girls process started. And my auditions for Mean Girls started, and then I booked that, and now here we are.
We're happy it worked out that way. And we hope you're here to stay. And I think it's really cool, especially since, you know, you have that degree. You can, you know, it's something that you could do simultaneously together and still kind of
yeah. And it's something that, I mean, when the time comes for me to leave Mean Girls, I would love to pursue that further. And I have this dream of creating this little business. I have an Instagram. You can follow me. Right now it's not very exciting, but I do have it. Called Broadway Wino. And I wanna be able to do some more work with that eventually. Just teaching people about those who drink wine, what is in it, so that you can know what you're consuming. Because
what if you pair it with a choreography lesson?
What if you do the choreography and I talk about the wine? I love the idea of pairing Broadway shows with wine, or like Broadway songs with wine and that kind of stuff. If we're gonna have to enlist some help.
Mm-hmm.
But I can sing and drink wine at the same time.
Okay.
Or Broadway shows and Araldus Chapman.
Which I think that market's cornered.
Yeah. We got it on lockdown.
Oh yeah.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick.
Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
Now, before we wrap our time together, we do a little segment to wrap every show. It's called Fastball Derby.
Oh, God.
All right. Mm-hmm. I want you to envision yourself, and then it's the ninth inning.
Okay.
Bases are loaded, two outs. You got to get home that winning run.
You might even be facing Aroldis Chapman, not to scare you too much, but.
Is he carrying the burn book?
Yes.
Currently. Okay.
Yes.
Or a broom. It depends. Is he doing Wicked tonight?
You're right. It really
it's
depends.
It's either a broom or the burn book. The he might have both.
Yeah.
Now, I'd say, Alan, are you down to alternate questions with us?
Sure. Cool.
Is it in the script?
Yes, it's you blew our cover bad tonight, Kate. Damn it.
I didn't blow it. Chris blew it.
Yes, true.
Well, I mean. Hey.
All right. You know what? I'll start.
Okay.
Favorite New York City meal?
Pizza.
You're a certified wine expert. If you could drink one wine for the rest of your life, what would it be?
Burgundy. That's so boring, but it's true.
What's the thing you miss the most about Cincinnati?
God, I'm so sorry I'm going to say this, but La Rosa's pizza.
Wait a second. You miss a certain Ohio pizza when you live in New York?
Yes. It's different. It's not better. But they have a specific... They have a weird, like, sweet sauce, and it is so good. And they make calzones better. Their calzones are the best ones I've ever had. That's still true in New York. They make calzones. I don't know why. They're so yummy.
Fighting words over here.
I know. But I am a New York pizza New York pizza is better than Ohio pizza. It's all better than La Rosa's pizza, but I miss it. It's the thing I can't get here. Mm. The other answer is Grater's ice cream, but that's what everybody from Cincinnati would say.
Favorite baseball player? There's an obvious choice after tonight.
Well, we'll go with Chapman. I still can't say his first name because it's a combination of two names that I keep bringing through my brain, but neither one of them is right.
It's Aroldis.
which is Adonis and like Adolfo
that
together.
That makes me think of Adonis DNA with Charlie Sheen.
That's literally, that. I was like, I can think of those two names. Neither one is right. And I can't remember how they go together every time.
I never heard of any Adonis who could throw 105 miles per hour.
I feel like if you are an Adonis, the whole point is that you should be able to throw a ball that fast.
Fair enough.
You've got those muscles, man.
What else do you do with those muscles?
Yeah. All right. Fast name.
All right. Sorry. Actor or actress you've learned the most from?
Oh my God. I'm going to say Jen Samard right now. Jen Samard.
Good one. We saw her in Disaster, Chris.
Oh yeah.
You're going to see her in the Company revival. It's coming up. She just left us for the Company revival.
What is your all-time favorite film?
Whoa.
That's a big question.
All-time favorite.
It's hard, right?
I mean, I hate saying, this is not a plug, but you probably would have said Mean Girls before. Honestly, I would have said that. I know because I love it. So I loved that movie so much. I am going to say Shawshank Redemption.
Good choice.
Proudest moment of your career.
Whoa. That's another one. Proudest moment. Watching a high school. It wasn't one particular high school, but a high school group, do a production of Bring It On about 2 years after we closed and watching somebody else do the show that we had created, having no connection to it at all, watching kids do it. I think that's probably it. I sobbed through the entire 2.5 hour production.
Wow. All right. Do I get the final one?
Yeah, you wrap it up for this.
All right. Lastly, best piece of advice anyone ever gave you and what was it?
This was given to me in college. I don't actually know who told it to me. I don't remember where I heard it. But it is the piece of advice that I give all the time now because it's the thing that saves me still. Like it's the thing that I have to remind myself a lot, which is you can never be anybody else. You can only be yourself because there are a lot of people who tell you you're a young so-and-so or you're just like so-and-so or do you know this person's work because you'd be so good at that. And especially when you're young, you start thinking like, oh, well, I will be the next, I'm going to use her name because it's not a good example for me. I'm going to be the next Kelly O'Hara, right? No, I'm not. Kelly O'Hara is going to be the one that's going to be Kelly O'Hara all the time. If anyone wants to hire Kelly O'Hara, they're going to hire Kelly O'Hara. They're not going to hire me. I don't need to be Kelly O'Hara because the world already has one of those. What the world doesn't have is another one of me. And I can tell stories in a way that nobody else can tell stories. And that's valuable and interesting. And people want to hear them as long as you are comfortable telling them like yourself. And it's one of the things that, because I have never seemed to fit in a great box. I've always been like, oh, you're in between the two girls in Wicked. Oh, and you're in between the two girls in Wonderful Town. And you're in between. There's always that for me. That's been my feedback my entire career. And rather than keep trying to force myself into one box or the other, are you a Glinda or are you an Elphaba? You can just be you. And maybe you won't do Wicked. Oh my God, one of the few blonde girls in New York City who hasn't done Wicked. But maybe you won't do Wicked. But you will do other things and they will be interesting and they will be you. And that's okay. Rather than trying to force yourself into somebody else's shoes.
I love that. That's awesome. Really cool.
Kate, you've been awesome.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Thanks so much
for coming on.
Yeah, I have to say, this podcast is particularly unique because it is unusual to sit around a table with three straight dudes talking about baseball and also talk about Broadway.
That is a rarity in this neighborhood, actually.
That is
pretty much one of a kind show over here.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. I love it.
Well, we were happy to have you. And, you know, for the folks at home, we hope you enjoyed the episode. If you liked what you heard, feel free to subscribe to Break a Bat wherever you get your podcasts. This is Al Malafronte signing off with Kate Rockwell.
Yo, bye guys. Thanks for listening.
Alan Seals. Not again.
It was so much more consistent this time. It was so much more structured.
Yeah.
We got a new running gag on Break a Bat. And lastly, Chris Katzman.
Thanks for listening, folks.
All right. It's been a pleasure, everyone. That'll close out the ball game.
Thanks for listening to Break a Bat. This is produced by the fine folks at the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit and subscribe at bpn.fm/breakabat. You can find me online at break_a_bat_podcast. And you can also find the Broadway Podcast Network on Instagram at Broadway Podcast Network. It's been so great having you here with us today, and we'll see you next time.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but yeah, not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.